This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
This is LGBT Plus History Month.
Sometimes I wanna roll or stay at home, walk in contradiction, get some factual and fiction. A little crazy, little sexy, little cool, little rough around the edges, but I keep it smooth. I'm always left to center and it's right where I belong. I'm the random minor, don't you hear a major song that I like that.
Sitting by you right before Mr. Ammon's class, cause my mama couldn't afford new J's polo, thrift store, thrift clothes. That was all I knew. Do you remember? I remember when you laughed when I cut my perm off and you rated me a 6. I was like, damn. But even back then, with the tears in my eyes, I always knew I was the shit. I like that.
Hello and welcome back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. We are doing some very, very special episodes for LGBT Plus History Month. So this is our first episode, which is dedicated to queer people of colour. We have two wonderful guests with us today. Later on in the show, we will be joined by the incredible Alexander Leon. But right now, across from me, I have the beautiful Mawan Rizwan. How are you doing?
All right. I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm really good. It's amazing to have you here.
Thanks, man.
I feel like we go way back. Well, like back a few years.
YouTube days. Yeah.
You're not doing the whole YouTube anymore.
No.
You're like a fully established comedian.
I'm not about that 1080p life anymore, man.
You've moved on.
Well, it's not just that, right? I mean, I still upload videos on YouTube as a way of making stuff and, you know, having creative autonomy. Because you just upload whatever you want, right?
And no one can police that.
Yeah. But I think if you're a YouTuber and you do it regularly, then you kind of have to like be okay with loads of people looking into your life. And
yeah,
I don't know if I wanted to make vlogs and, you know.
There's something about putting yourself on YouTube that makes people kind of go, okay, I have access to this person now. I want to know all the personal details about them.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like if you're on stage, people come to see your show, they love it, they applaud, hopefully. And then they leave and they're not going to be like, okay, so what's he had for breakfast?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, it's fine to have both experiences, you know, but I just... I want to live in the real life more. I'm spending too much time on my screen anyway.
Yeah.
I don't need to be uploading every other day. And then, you know,
like, yeah,
we look on our phones as it is way too much. Like, all the notifications, the red dots. YouTubers like must be so, like, because it's all that plus all your fandom trying to get through to you, right?
What's your screen time? Do you know what your screen time is? I don't check mine. Mine was horrendous, you know, the last time I checked it.
I got a phone update and it tells me now.
Yeah. It's horrifying.
It is. But also, so in January, because this is generally a sad month.
Yeah.
And I feel all existential and stuff. So I try and escape myself by going on my phone.
Sure.
I've gone up and it's quite bad. Like this week I've gone up 2 hours.
2 hours a day. On one of the days I checked mine, it was seven. 7 hours.
No.
7 hours on my goddamn phone.
A day?
Yeah. Or just
week?
On like one day. It was like a bad day. And apparently I spent the entire day on my phone.
What?
Like, I don't know. I don't know what happened. Like,
that's more time than
that's
eating.
My life. That's my life. Like, I watched a bit of Netflix on the tube, which was about an hour. But the other 6 hours.
You're watching.
I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, sort it out, Callum.
Yeah, I need to sort it out.
Get your shit together, mate.
Need to sort it out. You have a new show coming up in the Soho Theatre, and that's called Juice.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're very, very eager to tell me about this.
I'm just dead proud of it, man.
As you should be.
It's just that it's a show about... It's basically about how I accidentally made my mum famous.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to make YouTube videos, and I used to put my mum in them a lot.
Yeah.
And then one day I got a call from a producer in India, and she was like, we're casting a lead role for a new TV series. I got all excited. She was like, no, not you, your mum. I went to my mum, filmed her audition. We sent it off. 3 months later, she gets casted in this film.
Sick.
In this TV show. Starts living out there. She's been there for 5 years. She's a Bollywood actress. She's a household name all across Asia. And I'm not having any of it, because that was not the plan. She's getting more attention for something I did to get more attention from her.
Yeah,
and that's not on, man.
It's not fair.
It's not fair. I'm not getting the commission. I wrote an article about it in the New York Times. And I talk about how, like, her life has come full circle, right? Because we've had a very interesting relationship. And I talk about this in my show, but she has been gifted with a queer son. And that comes with, obviously, a lot of confrontational aspects, right?
Yeah.
So it's about the conversation I had with her, where I sat her down and my tactic was, I got to tell her everything all in one go. I got to tell her about my gayness, about ketamine. I got to tell her how much I drink. I got to tell her about the time I had bacon. I got to do it all.
Yeah, you've got it all in one.
And I'm going to do it
Soften
all in
the
one.
Blow.
Yeah. So she's overwhelmed. She doesn't realize she's upset. And I sat her down in the middle of Wagamama and I told her everything. And the way she reacted was so unexpected.
And is that a spoiler if I ask?
It's a massive spoiler.
Oh, okay.
Maybe
don't tell me. Okay, I'll come.
I'll just say she stole my thunder again, basically.
Yeah. Oh, she has a monster.
She has a thing.
She's a horrible person, isn't she?
Oh, don't get me started.
Let's talk a little bit about your comedy in general, because I've seen loads of bits and pieces. I have to say, I don't think I've actually come and seen you on stage yet. You can slap my hands.
Yeah,
go on,
slap yourself twice, mate.
That was very
seats.
Light. I thought you were going to give me a proper,
whack. Nah, maybe later. Also, it's across a desk. It's not.
But I've seen so much of your stuff online, on YouTube, but also I feel like you're just everywhere all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I think I absolutely love about your comedy is how you kind of, I don't know if you're subverting stereotypes, but you definitely play on stereotypes to be funny for a start. But I feel like you're trying to get a message across there, and I'm kind of interested in, you know, what goes on behind the scenes of that.
Yeah, I guess, but also comedy comes from pain, right? There's a very thin line between the two, so I think that's just how it forms. Like, the jokes that come out, the stories that come out are stories where I've been marginalized, or people around me have been marginalized, and that's the juicy stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's hard because, like, growing up for me, there were a lot of conflicting identities around my race and my queerness, and they couldn't coexist.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't a thing, because I couldn't see any of that around me. What you can't see, you can't be.
Yeah.
So, I use my, like, art to address those things, because if I don't, then why am I doing it? You know, like,
yeah.
I need the therapeutic element of of what that gives me, you know?
And I feel like the kind of representation element that you are giving is really important, because, you know, I often think about myself growing up and I think, okay, so I was a gay boy growing up and, you know, oh, where can I see myself? But then, you know, every now and then you're thrown a bone and I'm like, oh, okay, a gay person on television. But every single time, that gay person on television would be white. Mm-hmm. So I think it's those kind of intersections where I think we don't realize how important it is for people to fully be able to see themselves on screen, because I couldn't tell off the top of my head. I'm really struggling to kind of think of any queer people of Asian backgrounds. I'm sure there are a few, but I'm struggling. Like George Takei,
famous people.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're out there.
There are a few. Don't get me wrong, but it's hard.
There's not enough so that you feel like a good spectrum of three-dimensional people are being reflected, right?
Yeah.
So if there's always one person who has to wave the flag of like, oh, that's the brown actor, or that's the gay presenter, whatever, like, that's a lot of pressure on them as well. Mm. You know, they can't represent the entire community. You need several people so that there's more nuanced representation out there. And yeah.
Do you think that's where they're getting it wrong a lot of the time? They're trying to be a little bit more inclusive and say, you know, we want to be representative of more people, but it is that kind of tokenism. It's like, okay, we've ticked our Asian box over here, or we've ticked our gay box over here, and that's it. They don't kind of think, you know, we want a wide group of people to really fully be able to see themselves. And that doesn't happen by just going, okay, there's a gay person in that show for one episode, box ticked. You know, it's not real. It's not real life.
No, and also, I mean, like, I work in the entertainment industry. Right? We work in this world where it's not just about putting people in front of camera or on the mic that are queer people of color. It's also people behind the scenes, because the people at the top, like, you know, you can write a script, but the people commissioning it, if they're like, oh no, I don't really get it, it doesn't speak to me. Oh, I wonder why, because you come from a lot of wealth,
yeah,
and whiteness. So yeah, it's just about like getting people at the top as well that represent a wider range of people.
And this may be a slightly controversial question, but what do you think of the term people of color itself? Because I've seen a lot of kind of debate over this.
I don't know. You tell me, what's the latest? I feel like it changes every day.
You're asking me.
I don't know. I don't know, man. Call me anything. Just don't call me non-white.
Sure. Yeah.
Apart from that, I'm like, whatever. I mean, I had to, like, people of color. I think at some point I had to learn that's what you say.
You didn't know.
Yeah,
I feel like it's more of an umbrella term, and I've heard certain people saying, you know, don't describe me as a person of color. Really, if you're going to talk about who I am, like, talk about who I am, talk about my heritage, talk about where I'm from. Don't just kind of lump me under this big umbrella, because that is such a diverse umbrella that covers so many different people.
I want you to call me Pakistani born but Essex raised Moan Rizwan.
Okay, is that your full name?
Every time I refer to you
during the show. Okay.
Also, Leo, I'm a Leo, and if you could mention that'd be really great.
I'm not a fan of Leo, I was gonna be honest with you.
Why? Attention seekers.
Attention seekers, a lot of aggression.
What?
I mean, even in this
room. You saw
room
the way I
right
slapped
now.
You, that was not aggressive.
You did it.
I did it.
Like,
yeah.
If you were sat over there like a Capricorn, you wouldn't have hit me at all.
Hold on a minute, how are you the victim in this situation?
turn it on me. Classic white boy, you know.
Yeah,
turning
it's all about you, isn't it? Oh, you're so woke. I like that. Thank you, Callum.
Oh, you are very welcome. So I kind of want I want to know a little bit more about Juice. I know you can't give me spoilers, but I want, because I feel like on stage there's a lot to see when you're on stage. Mm-hmm. You're very flamboyant, vibrant. There's a lot of props, costumes. Sparkly tracksuits. That's what I've come to expect.
I got a tracksuit custom made that like compartmentalizes. So you can like take the sleeves off separately, then you can take the legs off, and then it all just whips off. It's the thing I'm most proud of.
It sounds like a beautiful thing, and I'm a bit gutted that you didn't make an effort today and wear it. Like,
I know, but I can't wear it if I don't plan on whipping it off.
Why can you not whip it off? It's radio. No one can see you except on the little videos that they film for Twitter.
Well, that's the whole point. Why would I wear something visually breathtaking for radio?
Just for me.
You can just imagine it, though.
Yeah, okay. I'm visualizing. A little bit aroused, not going to lie. Just a little bit.
Glitter gets everywhere. That's all I'm going to say.
It gets in all the crevices.
Oh, yeah. Glitter in my everything is my catchphrase.
Where can people see your show? It's at the Soho Theatre.
It's at the Soho Theatre, 13th to 16th of March.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's basically my way of like reclaiming some truth, you know, like I come from a long lineage of lies, and I think we all do, you know, like yeah. our parents don't know who we are, their parents don't know who they are, and I wanted to break that pattern.
Mm.
And I've got a very weird relationship with my parents now where they know too much about me. And because they know so much about me, they tell me things that I kind of don't want to hear, but I'm like, oh, well, this is cool.
Are we talking like intimate details about you?
Well, about the stuff that, you know, taboo stuff.
Yeah.
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 So,
I can relate. I mean, I have a radio show where I talk about the intimate details of my sex life every week.
You talk about everything on
this
show.
Like everything.
Yeah. I'm jealous because I can't talk about this stuff on my show because it's daytime.
See, it's FUBAR Radio. You can say whatever the hell you like. You can do a swear word if you want.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Buttholes.
Oh, wow. No, we're
that
gonna,
felt good. I can't say that on my show.
Good, have to take you off air, I'm afraid. That was too much. It
really?
Was too much. Can't handle the buttholes.
You talk about buttholes at every show, mate.
I do.
That's like your forte.
I do. I love a butthole. I do.
But the idea is, right, I know you do, and that's great. The idea is that, right, I think a lot of queer stories get buried. And a lot of queer history gets buried. And, right, you don't... generation after generation, queer stories are the first thing to be thrown under the carpet.
Yeah.
And, like, I can't name a single queer ancestor. And they exist.
Sure.
It's just they've been chosen not to be passed down, you know? Like, you hear about that uncle who we don't talk about, or that wayward auntie that went to Canada with a female friend. But queer ancestry gets killed off, and it's sad. And until we talk to our parents about it, it's never going to carry on.
Well, I think not just in ancestry. I think even like in like wider history, I feel like there's so much erasure around LGBT plus history. Again, especially when it comes to like people of color. You know, I don't know what your thoughts are on the Stonewall movie, but there was a lot of controversy around that because they like whitewashed the hell out of it. It was like, oh, look, all these white people made Stonewall happen. It's like, that's not what happened at all. And I feel like that's something quite common. And, you know, I'm always hearing these amazing stories and they're just not getting the attention they deserve. We had Bob the Drag Queen on this radio show, for instance.
I love Bob the Drag Queen.
And she talked about, you know, being arrested and going to jail because of her campaigning and going out in the streets and trying to rally support for, like, equal marriage and things like that. And they, you know, they threw her in jail for that. And that's not something anyone's talking about, you know. And and these moments of history, and yes, that was recently, but it's still history. It's still, I feel like we're making history all the time. And I feel like there is this tendency to just kind of roll over everything, especially if it's like, oh, that's not a white person, so we're not going to document that person.
Why is that?
Oh, systematic oppression, I think, is the answer to that question.
I think also because, like, stories, I don't know, they're passed on by people who want to... I don't know. But stories are passed on by people that see themselves in them.
Yeah,
and I think if a lot of people in power are not from a diverse background, then they're the ones who are spreading the stories, you know?
100%.
And that includes media, that includes execs.
Well, we count as media here, so we're trying.
Yeah. Reading about bit by bit.
You know, talking about...
Yeah, you stay late night, man.
Talking about buttholes.
Yeah, good.
That stuff. All right, should we have some music?
Have some music.
All right, this is a little bit of Lona by Mickey Blanco.
Short and feeling low, out of my zone, I'm on my phone, emotions can't control. I take a walk, I take a stroll, I can't be going home. I cause a problem, I'm going strong, just a broken soul. I'm fucked up, I know that I need help, I'm so sad. My best friend, the slap hat, my lover, my left hand. I done slammed, I done banged myself up by the range. I know I'm really strange, I know I'm not the same as I was to you then, like I am to you now. Understand and say how I want shit to go now. You ain't fucking with me, clearly I'm so really going grizzly. In my head I feel so dizzy,
I don't need your pity, please leave me alone. I've been feeling feelings that I don't condone. Feeling like I'm about to break my fucking phone. All these followers are on me. I'm alone, so alone. I'm alone, so alone.
special fan, really just a fan. Every dude that wish a man, he's got a complex. Was it you or was it him who sent the drunk text?
No trust, I'm jaded, you got it, I'm faded. I'm standing here wasted on Snapchat, I'm naked. I just slapped, I done banged myself up off the range. I know I'm really strange, I know I'm not the same as I was to you then, like I am to you now. Understand this ain't how I want shit to go down. Are you really gonna screw me, pull the trick, go and do me? Feeling gloomy, I'm so loony, all this bullshit has a beauty.
I don't need your beauty, please leave me alone. I've been feeling feelings that I don't condone. Feeling like I'm about to break my fucking phone. All these followers are on me.
I'm alone, still alone. I'm alone, still alone. I'm alone, still alone.
I think this will tie in quite nicely. I'm really interested in knowing who your LGBT plus icons are. Like, who do you look at? Whether they're historical, whether it's now, who do you look up to? I already know one of the answers, which is why I'm asking you now.
Yeah, I mean, you've just played Mickey Blanco, and then before that, Janelle Monáe. So I
which wasn't set up deliberately. No, I did not know you were going to say those two
now
people.
Now it also sounds like I'm just like, the last two people I've heard. But I generally think they're great and the rap game needs more queer people, right?
Yeah.
But I think my true gay icons, and from a young age, were Timon and Pumbaa.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, right?
Right.
Timon and Pumbaa.
I'm ready for this, yeah. Yeah.
They were Disney's first ever gay couple.
Were they, though? I don't mean to doubt it.
Look, I'll get
Moan
my representation where I can get it, okay?
Moan gave me the dirtiest look when I questioned that.
Beggars can't be choosers. I was a kid. I needed any representation possible.
Yeah, okay, I feel
you.
And
they were funny, and they were... I mean, look, think about it. They're proof that gay adoption works.
Yeah, I mean, look at Simba. What? Like, they raised him right.
They raised a kid who went on to become king. Of what? Of Pride Rock. Come on.
Pride Rock. That good. Yeah, I can't take that away from
mind
you.
Mind blown, right?
Yeah, splattered all over the walls.
Sorry.
And ceiling.
I did spit a bit.
Have you seen Bert and Ernie's Twitter?
No.
I know I've taken a tangent with this. It says on their Twitters that they're each other's best friend, and that really upsets me. I'm like, why can it not just say... I think it says roommate and friend.
Yeah.
I'm like, why can it not just say that they're madly in love with each other?
I mean,
because they're clear, like Timon and Pumbaa.
We all know it. Yeah, and I feel like there's a few characters in Disney films where you could really dissect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the new Beauty and the Beast like had a moment, didn't it?
I don't know how I felt about that moment. I feel like
A bit tokenistic.
No, yeah, but like the fact that it was hyped up so much, they were like, "Oh my god, we're going to have this moment in this Disney film. We're going to be inclusive."
See, I didn't hear about it until I saw it, and I was like, "Oh, that's cool." Whereas I didn't hear all the hype.
I heard so much hype about it.
Oh, then it would be anticlimactic.
I felt like I was being baited into watching it, and then when I saw it, I was like, "What? That 2 seconds? That little 2 second clip
that could be passed off as a comedic, whatever throwaway moment."
Yeah. What do you think about, you know, speaking about like amazing queer musicians like Janelle Monáe, etc.? What do you think about the announcement of Kylie Minogue hosting Brighton Pride this year?
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Well, I'm telling you now.
I'm under a rock. I don't know. She's hosting Brighton Pride because she's a gay icon, yeah.
Well, yeah, because I kind of feel like in two minds about this, you know. I think she has dedicated so much of her life and her career to standing up for LGBT plus people in a way that few other people, I mean, like Madonna has, Lady Gaga has, but there are very, very few people who have fully gone, you know what, I'm going to dedicate a massive portion of my time and career to supporting these people.
Has she, though? I don't know much about...
She has, yeah. She's got an incredible track record.
Like for politically
decades,
taking risks.
Yeah, you know, we're talking since the beginning of her career, she's been supportive when it wasn't as popular to do so. So, you know, I think
she's not like Barclays, who just like hop on the bandwagon at Pride in London. Oh, where were you, Barclays, when they were getting arrested? Oh, now you want to put a bus in front? Okay, on the parade, great.
It really bothers me. It does really bother me.
Oh, yeah, I love Skittles. Yeah, yeah. Thanks to Skittles, I'm now no longer oppressed.
There was something really, it was the, you know, and since, you know, it's LGBT plus History Month, there was the moment where I think it was the Lesbian and Gay Support, the Miners, were supposed to lead the parade again to celebrate the anniversary of it. And Barclays, as the sponsor, turned around and said, no, we've put loads of money in. We want to stay at the front.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on. It would have been, like, even speaking from a PR perspective, it would have been nice to go, you know what? Hands up. We're going to step back. We're going to let you take the lead. And I would have been like, you know what? You know, well done, Barclays.
Yeah.
Standing ovation.
You're so right, though. From a PR perspective, actually, it was like they did look like douchebags.
It didn't come off well.
Yeah.
It did not come off well.
But they insure my phone, so it's all good. I'm kidding. They don't.
Shout out
that horrendous...
Shout out to Barclays there. I'm with HSBC. I'm just putting that out there.
Oh, they're all corrupt, man.
Are they? The banks?
Yeah, they're all corrupt.
Where am I supposed to put my money?
I don't know. Put it under your bed. Under your mattress.
We're actually running out of time.
Okay.
I would love to talk to you about, you know, banking all day long.
Yeah, and the pink pound. I felt like I turned into an old bit of granddad there.
No, I actually fully support what you said, and I think a lot of people are actually really afraid to kind of make those statements in such a public place. You know, we've got 5 million people listen to this show, so...
Oh, you didn't tell me 5 million?
Yeah, 5 million.
Oh, well, then I take everything I said back.
Yeah, take it back.
I'm desperately poor. Barclays, if you want to hire a funny brown guy, I'll sell out any day.
There's a red button you can hit if you want to take us off air at any moment.
Oh, great.
You can just feel free to slam away.
Well, more power to Kylie, I think, is the roundup of that.
Yeah.
I said nothing on the issue, but...
The one thing I was getting at is, wouldn't you prefer to see somebody like Janelle Monáe or somebody headlining? Because I would. I love that Kylie's there. I'm the biggest Kylie fan ever. I think she's an amazing icon for the community. But, you know, put somebody like that up there, or Hayley Kiyoko. You know, there's so many people it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, I don't know.
It's tricky.
It is tricky. Maybe Kylie was cheaper.
it's probably true.
Janelle's expensive these days.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Since Moonlight, she's hard to get a hold of.
I try
calling every day. She doesn't pick up.
She's not answering. Not answering your
text. Kylie, she's in my DMs every day. I'm like, Kylie, chill, man.
Chill out, girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel it. So, Juice, I want to give you the opportunity to plug this one more time. I want to come and see it.
Yeah, you better.
I will. Be front row. Is there any audience kind of engagement, interaction going on?
No. No, it's a very inclusive show, but I mean, there's one bit where I get someone up, but it's so short and it's so joyous. It's never done in a picking on them kind of way.
Okay,
I fully understand my responsibility as a performer, and the performance comes from me.
Sure.
No one has to pay for a ticket and then do the work. You just got to sit there and enjoy the story.
It's always me in that situation. It's always me that gets dragged in.
Let me see your audience face. Yeah, too eager, mate. Too eager. Callum had a very straight face, but it was in your eyes.
Yeah.
Your eyes were just like, yeah.
I think there's a little bit of fear there as well. It's a lot of things that make them pick on me.
I have a really bad habit of picking the most reluctant person.
Yeah, it's not
like, I'm going to break you. And I've learned the hard way. Just Moan, don't do that.
Moan, I wish we could chat all day, but that actually is the end of our moment in the sun.
Yeah, well, it's good being here, man. This has been nice. Therapeutic at times.
I want to ask you, and I'm going to put you on the spot with this, if you would have a message for a young LGBT plus person, maybe a queer person of colour growing up, what would that message be?
It would be... Do your own thing.
Yeah.
Despite what the media tells you, there's more of you out there, and you will find the right people that will make you the joyous person you need to be in your life. But don't rely on the media. Just do your own thing. Do your own thing.
That was really touching. I thought you were going to take the piss, but that was actually really...
I wasn't,
was,
man.
Heartwarming.
I'm a touching person.
It was like...
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Everyone listening, go and see Moan's show, Juice, at the Soho Theatre. Go and buy a ticket right now, and I promise I'll be there. front row and center.
I'll see you there, man.
All right, let's have a little bit more music. This is another queer woman of color that I absolutely adore. This is Lizzo.
Worship me. Worship me. Oh, here go. Okay. Stop and smell my roses, posies. Appreciate my poses, they know. I'm a fanfare like the Star Spangled. Oh, say, can you see my angles? Cause I'm hotter than the stove top. You can put the kettle on, but I'ma make the thing pop. No, I ain't talking about my work, just my work. You can add it all up while I'm beefing up my purse.
Hands to the sky.
Worship me.
Access all areas.
I'm just about recovered from the NTAs.
I saw some pictures of you with Richard Madden.
Dickie was very excited about his award, obviously, and seemed to take an interest in my dress. I said, you're going to do Bond? And he looked at me and went, what do you think? I said, I think you should. He went, thank you. So do I. And he just was having a great time, wanted to know where the next party was, asked for my number. There you go.
So you swapped numbers with Richard Madden?
I've got his number if you wish, but I wouldn't give it, obviously.
He just split with his girlfriend, just putting that out in the universe.
Okay.
Every Thursday.
Access all areas.
From 6 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
This is LGBT Plus History Month.
It is LGBT Plus History Month, and I am joined now by the absolute angel that is Alexander Leon.
Some would say icon.
It's a push. It's a stretch.
That's it. I'm out.
How are you doing?
I'm really well. You know what? I was just saying to producers outside that I'm really excited to be here, but I am slightly mortified because I am wearing a coffee-stained, Greg's vegan sausage roll stained t-shirt.
Didn't realise.
I forgot to serve a look. Yeah. And I forgot that we were going to be filmed.
Yeah.
So no one watched the film when it comes out. Don't look at us.
I'm going to constantly retweet it. I just want people to know that, you know, that what you wore for the Kaleidoscope Trust dinner.
Oh, yeah. You saw that?
Of course I saw that. I watch everything you do. Tell me about that look, because that was fantastic.
Yeah, so, I mean, I want to seem like I'm the expert on all things South Asian fashion. Turns out I've been calling it a kurta, which is the wrong word. Mm. So it turns out I'm terrible at my own culture. Basically, it's a traditional South Asian kind of tunic. It's called a shivani, and a kurta is the thing that you wear underneath.
Right.
And I kind of, you know, the Kaleidoscope Trust Gala, it's an opportunity to dress up. Obviously, it's a fundraising event. But more than anything, I kind of just want people to be terrified of me.
Sure.
Terrified, but also intrigued by my non-white fashion. So I just thought I'd kind of own it. And to be honest, the amount of people who thought I was staff was more than I had.
Are you joking?
Yeah, no, of course not. I mean, people were like, oh, brown man in traditional dress. How do I get to the bathroom? And I was like, but I actually am staff of Kaleidoscope Trust, so I couldn't quite be annoyed.
I feel like that's something, you know, as a privileged white person, I feel like it's not something that I actually realize goes on as much as it does. You know, like the fact that you would think, oh, I'm going to wear this outfit. The fact that you would think for a start that you would have to know everything about it, that there would be an expectation for you to have all the knowledge on that thing. Mm. You know, secondly, that you would... the fact that you would dress that way would intimidate certain people. And thirdly, the fact that they would think you were staff.
I think the funny thing was that people were so bamboozled by it. Like, I didn't have to do anything. I just stood there and people were like, wow.
Yeah.
Which I kind of liked in a way. But no, I think that is part and parcel of being a minority. You know, when I'm in a room full of straight cisgender people, I become the expert on all LGBT things.
Sure.
When I'm in a room of queer white people, I become the expert on all LGBT people of color related things, which I'm of course not, right? I'm not a trans woman of color. I don't know the experience of a trans woman of color, but that is part and parcel of being a minority. People expect you to have all the answers and not have to change everything, and we don't necessarily. We're just trying to live our lives live them to the fullest, right?
A question I put to Mawan, who just was in the studio.
Who was hilarious. I mean, shout out to Mawan.
Isn't he a hero?
I was so pissed off. I was like, he's so much funnier than me.
No, you're great.
He's hilarious.
You've made me laugh two times already.
Oh, thank you.
But one of the questions I put to him was, you know, how do you feel about the term, you know, people of color? Because I think, you know, it's this umbrella term that we use so much, but like there are so many different diverse identities underneath that umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, it's a political term in the same way that the LGBT plus term is, right? And it's imperfect because in trying to create a political grouping of people, you obviously lose some of the nuance within that grouping. I like the term people of color for myself personally, but I don't try and impose it on anyone else.
Sure.
I have a lot of black friends who feel uncomfortable with the term because they feel more, I guess they feel more comfortable using the word black because it better encapsulates their experience.
Yeah.
Whereas I use the term person of color because I'm a mixed race person. I don't necessarily have, brown is not a word that we use necessarily in our day-to-day discourse. And I think that if anything, it encourages us as a community and as a group of people to understand that we have more in common than we have apart.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it's like to be a black person. I don't know what it's like to be an East Asian person. But what I do know is that black, brown, and Asian people and everyone that fits underneath the category of a person of color or BAME is on the receiving end of racism. And it's often from white people. There's still racism within that community. But we all kind of suffer from institutional discrimination or structural discrimination. And so I think the term is actually really important because it gives us the space to go, oh, I'm a person of color and you're a person of color. There's a lot different about our lives. We might speak different languages. We might be from completely different parts of the world. We might share absolutely no DNA whatsoever. But actually what we do have in common is the fact that we have a common oppressor or a common... I was going to say common enemy, which is not the
a shared experience. Isn't always positive.
Absolutely, and I think that's really important. Mm. In the same way that LGBT is, in the same way that, you know, I can't know what it's like to be a trans person, but I can see that trans people and gay people have a shared experience and can benefit from understanding each other's shared experience, right?
Well, you know, speaking of understanding from each other's shared experiences, I'm going to segue into a topic that I know that you are very passionate about and I'm very passionate about myself.
So excited.
You know, as it is LGBT plus History Month, and that is what we are celebrating on the show today, I want to talk about The rainbow flag.
Oh, no. Triggered.
We need like a soundboard.
Triggered. Yeah, okay, gotcha. Let's talk about it.
So, obviously, you know, the history of the rainbow flag is one of my favourite things. I'm not going to get into that right now because I could be here for 25
minutes. And it is genuinely fascinating.
It is. Yeah. It's brilliant. Yeah. And it gave us this all-inclusive symbol, you know, that we could all kind of use. Again, it was the commonality of all of us, you know, we all fit under this rainbow, and that's amazing. And then I believe it was in Philadelphia, 2 years ago, they decided to create. I don't know if this alternative flag has a name.
I think it's called the Brown and Black Stripe Pride Flag, but I actually don't think it does have a name.
It should have a name.
Yeah, I don't. Why doesn't it have a name? That's actually really odd.
It needs a name.
I know why it doesn't have. I know why it doesn't have a name, really, because it was never meant to be. Anyway, let's keep on talking about it because I am already triggered. You can tell by it. I'm already like.
So this flag, it was made to kind of acknowledge that there's an issue with racism within the LGBT plus community, and as a way of trying to, I guess, bridge of the gap? I don't know if that's the right word.
It was a symbol.
A symbol.
It was a symbol of a particular experience within the LGBT community in the same way that the trans flag is a symbol or, you know, the American flag with pride colours is a symbol of a particular experience within the LGBT community.
And I thought it came at a really important time. You know, it came at, you know, alongside things like Black Lives Matter happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like people were starting to realise that there were kind of issues with race within the community. And this flag came along. And the second I saw it, I was fully on board. And I thought it was an amazing symbol. I had a little pin of it, which I wore at Pride last year. I saw lots of other people waving the flag, which I thought was amazing. And now I feel like the listeners of this show will already know this. But if you do not, there has been a lot of backlash.
Massive backlash.
Huge backlash kind of against this
like
flag.
Like inexplicably gargantuan.
I don't understand it. Like it's bizarre. It's infuriatingly strange. And I try to understand the opinions of the people who are saying that they don't like it, but it doesn't sit right with me that they don't want to, you know, embrace something that is just supposed to be more inclusive.
But I think at the crux of it is this like fundamental misunderstanding of the role of that flag and what the majority of people of colour, in my opinion, and based on my, you know, not particularly comprehensive research, but basically talking to all of my friends that I know, some of whom are extremely, you know, prominent and passionate LGBT activists who focus on queer people of colour. I don't know almost any people of colour who want to replace the Pride flag with the brown and black stripe flag. And it seems like that is the fundamental misunderstanding. You have people saying, we shouldn't have to replace the flag. The flag is inclusive, yada, 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 yada. I don't think anyone disagrees. All we're asking for as queer people of colour is a symbolic acknowledgement of a particular set of issues that we face and just our own flag. I mean, the flag will be flown at Black Pride. It'll be flown at Pride events alongside the original Pride flag. There's no, there's actually no tension there. The tension has been created because many people in the LGBT community, particularly white, gay, cisgender men, it would seem from the amount of trolling I get from that particular demographic, feel that the existence of this flag somehow encroaches on their experience of being LGBT. And I guess what the question is, you know, for listeners and for people who are thinking about this and talking about this, why is that not expressed when we have a LGBT Christian flag that has a cross in the 100%. Left-hand corner? You know, why do we not think that way about the trans flag or, you know, the enormous amount of variations of the Pride flag that currently exists, as you know? And I think, frankly, it comes down to racism. You know, there's this thing of like, oh, well, now you're trying to occupy our space. You're trying to take our space from us. We're not.
Yeah.
We just want an acknowledgement of the fact that there's rampant amounts of racism within our community. We have our own experience, which is unique to us, which has never been celebrated or very rarely celebrated historically and continues to not really be celebrated in the way that it should be. And all we're asking for is that symbol. And the simple ask of that symbol seems to be so enormously controversial. And I guess that is, for me, extremely disappointing. You know, when I was writing the script for the YouTube video on this, I was extremely emotional because it was a reminder that yet again, whenever I try and take up space or talk about the issues that affect me as a person of color in our community, it's always inherently controversial to someone.
Mm.
When all I'm really talking about is my life and my experiences and my particular experience. And I think, for me, the backlash showed that there's a long way to go.
I think I completely agree. You know, the backlash really kind of showed me that this is still an issue. The fact that people would kick off in this way, and I had a lot of people tweet me when I talked about it, and that's me, a white person talking about it. I can only imagine that, because there's a lot of people out there really, really fighting for this flag, and I think that's amazing. And they're getting so much backlash. I replied to a few tweets and things about this where people were saying, this shouldn't be replacing our flag, and I was like, well, hang on a second. It's not replacing the flag. Yeah. It's just an alternative flag. Mm. And like you said, there are actually over 100 different variations of the Pride flag. Yeah. And I don't think I have ever heard anyone complain about a single one of them. Mm. And now suddenly there's this flag and a few people are going, this is great. This makes us feel included. This makes us feel more a part of this community. This is highlighting an issue that we're really passionate about. Yeah. This is a really, really great thing. And people are saying, no, you can't have that.
I think it's also because Manchester Pride, this happened 2 years ago, right? It's because of Manchester Pride deciding to use this flag as their symbol for their Pride celebration that this conversation was reignited. And so I think because there are institutions and organizations out there who are saying, this is a problem and we're going to symbolically show that we appreciate that this is a problem and that we want to do better, that people feel like their space is being encroached on. Mm. When actually it's just an acknowledgement. It's actually quite an empty symbol. It's not, as far as I'm aware, Manchester Pride hasn't said anything about, what they're planning to do to create a more inclusive space. I mean, my hope is that they are doing that. But just, I think it comes down to, I feel very often every time that I ask for anything in these spaces, someone finds a reason to say no. Mm. And that's although I'm a person of color, I'm a cisgender gay man, and I have all the privileges that come along with that. And if we as a community can't even have that, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
Actually. So, having said that, there are also lots of people out there who are like, run a black flag, people of color, which is great. And that's, that's what we need actually, allyship.
I think that's a really, really positive takeaway, actually. That there may be people trying to shut it down, but there's also a lot of people flying it. And, I hope this had an impact on people. But, even me as a white person, when I was at Pride last year, the fact that I saw so many white people flying the brown and black rainbow flag, I was like, that is real. They've gone out of their way to get that flag to say, to all my friends out there, you are welcome here. Yeah. And I'm just by waving this flag, it's not hurting anyone. I'm just telling you that you have my support. I understand the issues. Like you said, it's an acknowledgement.
Yeah, and I had the exact same experience at UK Black Pride, seeing white friends and other white people fully engaging in the celebrations in a way which was respectful and like wanting to acknowledge how amazing and diverse queer people of color are. So we're bridging that gap slowly. It's always going to be controversial, isn't it?
Well, I think we need to remember that Pride is supposed to be controversial.
Yeah.
Pride started as a protest.
Yeah.
We had the Freedom Day parade in San Francisco and the first official Pride in New York in, 1970.
And now it costs £75. What?
And now it's tremendously expensive.
Yeah. I do appreciate, though, I think it's really hard for Pride organizations to raise money for Pride.
It is.
And I think that is worth acknowledging, that it is a really, it's a slog for them. And most Prides are kind of volunteer-led. And, so I get that there needs to be some kind of commercialization of Pride on some level in order to have an event which is up to scratch.
It's difficult.
£75 does feel like a lot, doesn't it?
It's expensive. And I actually tweeted my frustration with this. And I had a couple of people come back to me who are actually volunteers who work at London Pride. They work at Brighton Pride and Manchester Pride as well. And they were kind of saying, look, we agree with you. We wish it could be free, but it's becoming a bigger event. And as it becomes bigger and bigger, it's harder to fund and it's difficult. But one thing that I really, really took away from this, and it was really, really positive, was that the amount of money that Brighton Pride raised last year for LGBT plus causes, and that was because of Brittany being there and, the slightly pricey ticket price.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand or appreciate that. So just, I know it's a lot of money and I want everybody to be able to attend, but I think my viewpoint has actually changed a little bit on this because actually that money is going not just to put on Pride, but to other amazing places as well.
Yeah, but it also comes down to, like, what is the function of Pride in our society? You know, Pride in certain parts of the world is still, and is still necessarily, a protest. But we are in a position in this country where we have won, not all, but many of our rights. And so perhaps our Pride celebrations have to change alongside the kind of new... The new rights that we're winning and the new kind of people that we're becoming, which would make sense to me. But I think that, you know, we're in a bit of a transition phase, right? Like, it's equal marriage or decriminalization of same-sex intimacy. These are, like, actually new things. Mm. You know, even in the US, it wasn't decriminalized until it was, like, in the last 15 years federally, right? And which is insane when you think about it in the United States. So I think all these things are new, and so maybe our Pride celebrations have to change alongside the LGBT community changing and becoming more equal, which
Absolutely.
Is something to celebrate, right?
I think it's almost a case of the more equality we get, the more we realize the less that we have.
Yeah.
You know, once we're like, okay, we're not, nobody's trying to murder us anymore, then we go, oh, okay, so we want to get married. And then we realize, oh, we can get married now. And we start to see smaller issues. And, you know, all these issues are constantly becoming apparent. And it's just kind of acknowledging them and making a change one step at a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should we have some music?
I would love some music.
All right, this is a little bit... Oh, I absolutely adore this man. This is Sierra Leone by Frank Ocean.
We're spending too much time alone.
We're spending too much time alone.
And I just ran out of Trojans.
Horses gallop to her throne.
We're behaving like teenagers.
Yes, we're behaving like teenagers.
Making less than minimum wage.
Still inside our parents' home.
No, I don't live in Denver.
No, I don't live in Denver.
I grew up in Sierra Leone.
And her pink skies will keep me poor. Sierra Leone, Sierra Leone.
Tidbits of intuition that I be getting. I've been
Sierra
in this shit. She must be getting this shit. Feeling different. She feeling too good to me. Glistening, shimmering underneath the sunlight.
Reaching for your nipple, cause it's time for her to eat. Tonight I lay her in the cradle if it's time to go to sleep.
Go to sleep.
I sing a linen lullaby, she can have a pretty dream. Baby girl, if you knew what I know, knew what I know.
That little unexpected guitar at the end threw me. I want to talk about all the work that you have been doing. I know you work at Kaleidoscope Trust.
I do.
I have no idea what you do there.
Give us money. at Kaleidoscope Trust?
Yes.
Yeah, so I can talk all about Kaleidoscope Trust. So basically we're an LGBT human rights charity, and we work particularly with people, activists, and organizations across the world in countries that still criminalize same-sex intimacy. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a kind of layman term. I mean, the work we do is extremely complex. We look at things like legislative reform. We look at intersectionality between women's movements and LGBT movements in different countries and in different regions. But the kind of the basis of it is basically that we're trying to help and collaborate with activists on the front line in their countries to gain equality for LGBT people across the world.
That's
because
really,
we're in such a privileged position in the UK and across Europe, broadly speaking. And I've always been extremely passionate about ensuring that once we win a certain extent of our privileges, that we give back to the rest of the world, but that we give back in the way in which they want, right? We don't want to fly in, fly out and say, fly into a country, go and do this to get equality and fly out. No, we want to support the people that are doing the work, who speak the language, who are you know, part of the culture. And Kaleidoscope Trust has always been a really, really wonderful organization for doing that work in a kind of ethical and sustainable way with people on the front line.
That's amazing. And I feel like Kaleidoscope Trust is one of the, you know, we have so many amazing LGBT charities. One that I haven't actually heard a lot about.
Yeah.
So it's really great to hear. I didn't actually know the details of that. So that's really wonderful to hear.
We're quite small and we've actually been growing recently as well, because I think this issue is becoming more and more pressing for people in this country, where people in the country are realizing that we're actually fairly comfortable. I mean, not to downplay the enormous amount of discrimination that still goes on and violence. And, you know, I think the treatment of trans people in this country is horrific, and intersex rights are still a bit up in the air. But, you know, we do, many people in this country do have the capacity to help other people. I'm really lucky to work for an organization that does this kind of work. And there are plenty of other organizations out there. I mean, Stonewall has an international program, which is really wonderful. They're focusing on the rights of lesbian, bisexual, and trans women, which is an extremely under-researched area. Yeah. You have organizations like the Human Dignity Trust who support people who are trying to legislate for change, so who are kind of like maybe suing the government around particular laws regarding LGBT equality. So yeah, there's lots of organizations out there and lots of good work happening.
I think as well, like you personally, I think you're doing a lot of amazing work. There are a few names that come to mind. Like, I think a lot of the time, like with issues like the, I'm not going to go back onto the rainbow flag, don't worry.
Trick it again.
But with issues like that, I often find myself, you know, sometimes I'll go to Twitter and I'll be like, I actually want to see, you know, what actual people of color are saying about this. And I think there's a handful of people I always look to, people like Phil Samba, Lady Phil, Travis Alabanza.
All of whom are phenomenal activists and people.
But yourself as well. I feel like you're really occupying a space that needs to be occupied. You've made your own YouTube channel where you're talking about issues that affect the LGBT plus community. And you probably know this, but YouTube's very white.
But it's also really hard and really expensive. And
And
as soon as I started pursuing it, I kind of in my mind began to realize perhaps why it's so white, for a bunch of different reasons. But no, thank you. I mean, I must say that there are lots of LGBT people of color on YouTube doing really cool and interesting stuff. But what I found when I was doing my research before I started the channel was that a lot of those people they're doing comedy, or they're doing, you know, kind of your traditional vlogging, like a day in the life. And they're not necessarily explicitly talking about issues that affect them and their community. And so I kind of saw that there was a bit of a niche there and I jumped on in there. But yeah, I'm really excited about the YouTube channel. It's just like, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize how difficult it is.
But you're doing a great job of it.
Oh, thank you.
You do a really, really good job of it. We're actually coming right up to the end of the show now. But there is one last question that I wanted to ask you. And this is, who is your LGBT plus icon?
Oh, yeah. Look, this is so hard.
I know, but you're going to have to answer.
This is so hard. Okay, so let me just give you my wording. So I wanted to say Lady Phil, because Lady Phil is a genuinely phenomenal activist.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think acts in many ways as a symbol of my movement and our movement as LGBT people of color. But I couldn't possibly call her an icon on air because she would think that's hilarious and tease me about it. I'm going to like have a political protest and make a political point here. When I was growing up, there was no people that looked like me or who seemed like me that I looked up to. And so I think I kind of like don't have an LGBT icon, at least an LGBT icon that reflects my life experience. And I didn't have that growing up. So I'm going to kind of say, I don't think I really have one.
I think that's a fair answer.
But I want there to be more.
I'm gonna say that your answer was Lady Phil. I don't care if she ridicules you for it.
Well, Mwan was saying, we were talking about Kylie before. You were talking about Kylie with Mwan before, right? And I was thinking about, it's so amazing that Kylie is going to be part of, is it Brighton Pride?
Yeah.
But how cool would it be to have, as you said, like Janelle Monáe, MNEK?
I think that's the next step.
Yeah.
We really, really need
like
that.
Like people who are LGBT plus should probably be our LGBT plus icons. Do you know what I mean? Like
100%.
I think that's the next step.
100%.
Post Kylie, post Gaga. I do love Kylie and Gaga. You can't help it, can you?
That actually brings us to the end of the show.
Oh my God.
I cannot thank you enough for coming on, and also to Mawan Rizwan, who we had earlier on the show. You are both superstars. I can't thank you enough.
No, you hang up.
I'm going to play you out with a little bit of What by Leaf. See you later.
Bye.
Kamikaze wanna fire bomb. The bomb ticket, you got your mom's feeling. You tell your man, chill on me, hey, boost like literally. What it is, what is up, what is what? What it do, what it don't? What it is, what is up, what is what? What it do, what it don't?
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.